a similar study in Barbados, and we're happy that all the DHAs are ready and complete. And let me apologize ahead of time that I do not plan to do any comparative studies, because one of the commitments that we've given to the British High Commission is that we will not attempt to use the data to set one country up against the other. So if you happen to get hold of the other two studies, you can do your own comparison, but it wouldn't come from us. So that's essentially what we're doing, and I'm happy to present this information in public domain. Afterwards, I receive email addresses for anyone who wants a copy of the report. You're welcome to use it for research purposes, to research. However, it can inform discussions, and I do hope that it will capture the attention of the parliamentarians as they attempt to debate this important issue in Guyana. So with that said, let me just get to the data. I've chosen not to spend too much time dealing with the methodology. The information is written up in the full report, which you can read at your convenience, so that we can actually just deal with some of the issues. But it is a representative survey across Guyana. We attempted to capture communities, diverse communities across Guyana. We actually went into the interior areas and so on. So it's not just Georgetown and around. We made a considerable effort to get information from every corner of the country, all the age groups represented once they're over 18 in the survey, equal numbers of men and women. So we have a fairly representative sample of public opinion. So, yeah, I guess you can actually have questions at the end. This is the first slide that I wanted to introduce to you. Sex and identity versus race in Guyana. One of the things we asked people was if they can tell us what their sexual identity is. Now, I know this is a challenging question. The survey was interviewer administered, but there was a section at the back where persons were invited to tell us how they felt without the interviewer knowing. So they were able to complete part of it and insert it into a bag without that interviewer asking. And one of the things we asked people in that section, we asked them who they voted for in the last election. And we use that information in a way you'll see shortly. And we also asked them, how would you describe yourself? Now, I appreciate that it's a sensitive question to ask, and persons will probably not tell you the truth if their identity is anything other than heterosexual. But we felt that this was probably the best way that we could get some kind of information on it. There are no well-established formulae to determine how many people in a society are actually gay. There's a 1 in 10 presumption that is made as far as males are concerned that was established back in the 1950s and 60s. We've never actually done anything more recently to determine. The other question is, sexual identity is an extremely difficult and challenging thing to pronounce upon, because when you ask a person, there's an assumption that that individual actually knows their sexual identity, because they might not. There may be some confusion. And then there will be a question as to how do you identify sexually as distinct from what do you do? And the phrase, men who sleep with men, has come from that reality, that there are a number of men who sleep with men that don't identify themselves as gay, but may do it for reasons that are entirely known to them and are very complex. So it's a complex issue. So for the purposes of simplicity, we ask people, would you say that you're heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, or would you prefer not to say? And this is the data, as you can see here. 78% of people said they're heterosexual. The homosexual is 3%, bisexuals is 4%, and persons who prefer not to say are 15%. Now, presumably, you could prefer not to say for any number of reasons. I would be somewhat suspicious if you preferred not to say that maybe there's something that you want to say that you don't feel comfortable saying. Which basically says that in Guyana, declared homosexuality is around 3%, bisexuality is around 4%, and then 15% of those could very well add to that group. Which basically means that there's no evidence to suggest that your population in Guyana is overwhelming. And I must tell you that the population numbers that we're seeing as compared to the other countries are not very different. They're probably about the same thing. But I found it useful to insert the race statistics in there. And this is not from our survey. This is from a 2002 census in Guyana. Right? And I found it useful to just make the comparison, because as from a human rights perspective, I'm not trying by any far stretch of the imagination to say that Guyana is overwhelmed with gay people and as a result the law should respond to that group. What I'm saying is that homosexuals at 3% should be no less entitled to rights than Portuguese, who are 0.2% of the population. So it is not a sizable number of persons in the population. At the same time, you can see that you have, for example, more homosexuals than you have white people, unless that has changed between 2002 and now. And I just thought it was a useful comparison to make, lest we go down the road of saying, well, it's only 3% of the population, it's not many, so it's nothing to worry about. This was interesting. We asked people about gay associations. So do you have any homosexual friends, family members? Do you know any gay people in your business and workplace, political leaders, religious leaders who are gay? I found the last one was particularly fascinating, religious leaders who are gay, because I didn't know that that was possible, but I guess it is. These are the numbers that we've seen. So you're seeing that almost half of Guyanese can say that they have a gay friend. We didn't ask them whether that person told them they were gay or whether the person assumes that my friend is gay. But the fact is that close to half of Guyanese actually can say they have a friend who is gay. And the fact that the person is still their friend, I guess that would imply that we don't really have huge problems with the fact that the person is gay. What is more significant about this information is that this has actually impacted directly on the attitude that the person has. So as I compare this data and run cross-tabulations with some other data that you'll see shortly about the actual attitude, people who have gay friends and gay family, and certainly who work in a place that has gay people, people who have an association with gay people tend to be more comfortable with them. And their attitude is a lot more open and warm, which says a lot about the way the phenomenon works, because I tend to think a lot of this issue has to do with ignorance, or lack of knowledge, or lack of familiarity. And this certainly would suggest to me that in instances where people become more familiar, they don't become more contentious, they actually become less contentious of gay people. Okay, so this was the central data sets which relates to the general attitude towards homosexuals. So we use three words. When you think of a homosexual, do you hate them, do you tolerate them, do you accept them? And this is the basis on which we identify homophobia or acceptance in one way or the other. There are three simple terms which regionally we have agreed communicate the most about a general view that a person has about a homosexual in one single word that we can use in Trinidad, Guyana, and Barbados, and it pretty much means the same thing. But generally speaking, when you hate somebody, we understand that, that's what it means. And what we have found in Guyana is that homophobia or hate stands at about 25%, tolerance about 39%, and acceptance stands at about 19%. The level of homophobia is low. I think that 25% is not an alarmingly high number. It generally says that the vast majority of Guyanese, if you take acceptance and tolerance together, the vast majority of Guyanese are actually relatively accepting. What is also interesting is the demographics of this acceptance, which is presented in the other charts and demonstrates clearly that women tend to be more tolerant and accepting than men. Older people tend to be less tolerant and accepting than young people. Persons who were born outside of Guyana are generally more accepting than people who were born inside of Guyana, which is like your expatriate and overseas population. And persons who are more educated also tend to be more accepting. So you can identify what you could call drivers of acceptance. And the drivers of acceptance would be age, sex, origin, educational level. To me, these are the major factors that tell us what makes a person likely to be more liberal or likely to be more homophobic. So older men who are less well-educated and were born in Guyana will probably be more inclined to be homophobic. And in a sense, it's useful to know, especially the age factor, because the age factor says to me that there's a resilient core of people who are not likely to change their views in any hurry. We did this survey in 2004 in Barbados and in 2013. And in that year, the level of homophobia has not fallen by more than a percentage point, which is statistically insignificant. Which basically says to me that there is no possibility that in Guyana in another 10 years that you're likely to see less homophobia. What you're probably going to see is more acceptance and more tolerance. And the age factor is still there. So the older people are not likely to change. But I do think that the focus on younger people would suggest that, you know, younger people are less inclined to be concerned about these issues than we do. And I don't know that this information surprises anyone, really. It certainly didn't surprise me. Because anecdotally, this is what we always always assume. The gender thing is fascinating, and I'm anxious to hear, you know, gender studies is a big area. Some of the women speak to this issue as to why is it that it is less of a problem for women than men. Because my presumption is that a woman is likely to be at a greater threat sexually from a bisexual male than a man would. But for some reason, women have less problems with homosexuality than men do. But that is, I think it is deeply rooted in the whole question of gender, and perhaps will be looked at later. All right, another question we ask people is, how do you think a person becomes homosexual? Is it a birth defect, lack of poor religious moral upbringing, or bad parenting? People are just born that way, the origin is irrelevant, psychological trauma or sexual abuse, or think that homosexuals choose to be that way. I tried very hard in this question not to make a value judgment in terms of our own, and certainly the design team. We didn't want to impose our own view, but we wanted to present a range of options that we felt that people would be comfortable saying, I can choose one of these because this represents what I see. And what we can see is that in Ghana, the majority of people believe that it's a choice, right, in Ghana. The bishop and I had a very interesting discussion, and I suspect that he will raise some issues there, where at points in time in the report, it might have become obvious that certainly as a person writing it, I was a little uncomfortable with the idea that the majority of people thought it was a choice. And I do feel that it is a reasonable objection to me that if a person thinks it ought to be, that is a choice, that they have a right to hold that view. Because it's interesting that even though there are people who do not feel, who feel that homosexuals may have an option to practice or not practice in the case may be, still have relatively strong views in relation to discrimination, which you see shortly. Okay. Violence against sexual minorities. We asked a very straightforward question. Is violence against sexual minorities discrimination or not? And the majority of people who responded said they thought it was. So there's no question in people's minds that violence against sexual minorities is discrimination. 71% of Ghanaians think this way, which is, I would say, overwhelming. So there's no question in Ghana that people believe that violence against a person on the basis of their sexual orientation is a form of discrimination. And moreover, we ask people, homophobia, however defined, do you think it can contribute to teen suicide, alcoholism and substance abuse, mental depression, increased incidence of HIV/AIDS, or temporary permanent residence from absence from school? And in all instances, a majority, either a vast majority is in the case of teen suicide, or a reasonable majority is in the case of temporary or permanent absence from school. A majority of Ghanaians felt that all of these factors, which I think we all agree are negative, can result from homophobia. And that is, I would say it is a refreshing reality. Do you think it is acceptable to treat people differently or discriminate on the basis of any of these factors? So it's race, gender, age, sexual orientation, and religion. And we ask people, are any of these a basis on which you can discriminate legitimately? The figures that you're seeing here are all quite low, but you appreciate that the figures that you're seeing here are all a small minority of people, even less than the 25% of people that we would describe as homophobic in Ghana. So there is no strong support for discrimination on the basis of any of these factors, sexual orientation included. And what I thought was interesting is that the two highest support levels came in relation to age and sexual orientation. When a person cannot choose their age, and age discrimination is a relatively new phenomenon. People are only now beginning to learn about the way in which age discrimination works. And I think in many ways, people are only now beginning to learn about sexual orientation discrimination. So there's a lingering belief that these two are legitimate, but definitely as it relates to all of the others, there is no support. And indeed, in all of them, there's really no support for discrimination. The religious point, again, is an interesting one. The 16% of people who believe it is appropriate to discriminate on the basis of religion. But what that says to me more is that you have race and religion having almost equal levels of support. And in both instances, race and religion are essentially, one is not a choice and the other one is a choice. I mean, the question of whether or not you are born into a religious family is complex, and I acknowledge it is. But fundamentally, you can become a Christian today and not become a Christian tomorrow. So, I mean, it is kind of a choice. While the person's race is not a choice, but there's a comparable level of support there. But I guess these are all interesting sociological issues. And then secondly, the state needs to provide special protection from discrimination to all of these groups. Essentially, this question tells us what appetite do Guyanese have for special protection, or who Guyanese people believe is in need of special protection. And what we found is that people think that children are in need of special protection. People believe that women are in need of special protection. People believe that the handicapped and disabled are in need of special protection, and perhaps persons living with AIDS. But in all of the other categories, gay persons who appear to be gay, who identify as gay, and then minority racial groups receive a slightly higher level of support. And again, this would suggest that while Guyanese oppose discrimination, they are not convinced that persons who are gay are in need of special protection. In other words, they're not convinced that society is homophobic, and they're not convinced that there is a whole lot that needs to be done about the level of homophobia. In other words, I would say that Guyanese tend to think that there's much to do about nothing as far as this issue is concerned. The extent to which that's true or not is another matter. Maybe we can get to that today, but that is pretty much how this thing is seen. Now, this set of data here relates to the notorious Buggery Law. And the notorious Buggery Law is one that criminalizes same-sex relations between men in private or public, and it also criminalizes anal sex between men and women, but in private in the same way. I don't get the impression that a lot of Guyanese really understand the law, and when you read the report, there's a lot of contradiction in relation to what people know the law to say, what people really want the law to do, and what it actually does. And I can just tell you in a summary, I get the impression that Guyanese have a fundamental problem with what we call public sex, which is not necessarily men having sex in public, because I don't know that that's particularly popular. But I think that it's public displays, so hand and affection. I think that that's really the problem that Guyanese have, and they believe that the law prevents that from happening, which is quite fascinating, because the law says nothing about that. But when you actually go through the report in detail, you will see that when we ask them questions like, what would you really like the law to do? You're kind of seeing that people want, they don't want the public thing. And the public thing for them is that they go hand in a while, but they don't really want to prevent people from doing anything in private, because they believe that that is something that happens, which is probably not true. They also believe that it's something which ought to be able to happen in private, and there's no reason why a person shouldn't be able to do that. So we explain the law. We had a lawyer draft a term which explains the law and explains what it was. And we say to people, this is the law, you believe that the law should be maintained, and 53% of Guyanese have said yes, they think the law should be maintained. Right? Again, the support levels are almost identical in all three islands, where people tend to think the law should remain as it is. The question that logically follows is that if the law doesn't achieve the objective, what exactly do you think the law's role is? And that's something I'm going to get to shortly. But the important point here is that 53% believe the law should remain as they are, 28% think it should be moved or modified, and 90% are really unsure. And that is interesting. What I've done here for you is I've given you a range of data from the United States of America asking whether homosexuality between the same sex adults should be legal or illegal between 1977 and 2010. And what you can see here is that the 43% support level in the United States in 1977 is not that far away from where the Caribbean, where Guyana is right now. The United States has now moved to a situation where in 2010, this was before gay marriage even came up, in 2010 there were at 58% support for the legality, which is in fact in almost all of the states, well, all of the states now, do have decriminalization. So you're asking people here, do you think it should be made legal again? The point I'm making is that over this period of time, there has clearly been a movement in terms of public opinion, and it started because it became legal. And you know, one of the realities of life is that when something is decriminalized and people realize it is not having the cataclysmic effect that they thought it would have, then you find that views and opinions are modified over time. the government clearly took the lead in relation to the United States. And I'm suggesting that the opposition to the change of the law does not necessarily mean that a law does not change. And probably a better example relates to Barbados. Barbados passed abortion laws in the 1980s. We were probably the first Caribbean country to take such a bold step to essentially allow abortions on demand pretty much in Barbados. It is not a difficult thing to procure. The church had a problem with it, which I have every respect for. But the government took a bold step and they did it. And what they found was that any public opinion poll done in those times would have shown that a majority of Barbadians completely opposed it because it was what the priest told them to do. Instinctively, people did not like the idea of such free and easy abortion being available. And that was the position that was taken by the people. The government, however, said that they have a public health issue to look after, and they essentially went ahead and did it. We do polls in Barbados now on abortion. It's not an issue. You know, most people said that they think it should be exactly as it is. And the point is that these things will not change unless the government takes the initiative to change them. Try not to open a can of worms here, because I know that abortion is a particularly sensitive issue. That's not what I want to say. Right, so we ask people then, if you do not think that the laws should be changed, what do you believe the laws achieve? And this is a statement which pretty much expresses what a majority of people feel. Guyanese think that the buggery laws are a fair and reasonable expression of their moral or religious standards. So you can interpret that in the best way that you can. It's not about stopping the spread of homosexuality, that's only 31%. Almost half of people do feel that it will help to protect young people from abuse, which is something that has to be taken seriously. The public health issues are about 49%. But the two big bars relate to the moral and religious standards. They believe it helps to maintain moral and religious standards, which is interesting. I collected and I presented these two sets of data next to each other because we asked people, do you support same-sex marriage? Do you support common law marriage? We felt it was interesting to ask those two questions because, to the best of my knowledge, common law marriage is not something which is ordained by the church. And I believe the bishop would support me in that. Common law marriage is where people live together and cohabit and so on. It's very popular in the Caribbean, I understand. Same-sex marriage is similarly not ordained by, certainly not by the church in Guyana, most churches. What we found is that there's a disconnect between the whole idea of the religious basis on which people would make decisions, because a majority of Guyanese support common law marriage, a majority of Guyanese oppose same-sex marriage. So the point is that it cannot just be the religious basis, there has to be something else that is intervening in terms of these views and opinions, because clearly it's not just a religious issue. It has to be something else about the same-sex issue that creates problems for people. Gay rights issues. We think in this instance, we asked people to define gay rights issues. What is gay rights? And the majority of people did argue that it was the right of all persons to be treated equally regardless of their sexual orientation. And then we asked them, do you think it's a priority for the Guyanese government? And most people said no. My presumption is that it is either not a priority because people believe that these issues are taken care of, or that government has more important things on their agenda. But it can definitely be seen that people understand the term gay rights to be properly located, but they don't believe that it should be a priority for the Guyanese government at this time. Possible reasons for changing the laws, and this is interesting. In this instance, we asked people if they would support the repeal of the buggery laws if it could be proven that it contributed to psychological problems, especially among young people or incidents of HIV/AIDS. And in both instances, the majority of Guyanese said yes. If you could prove to them that either of these two were reality, then they would support the change in the laws. And the fact that they have said, we would support a change if you could prove, suggests that most people are not convinced that the laws have anything to do with social or psychological problems, or that they contribute to an increased incidence of HIV/AIDS. The fact or the potential possibility that both of these things are true is something that can perhaps come out in the discussion. One of the things I did here was I asked, the last part of the survey, we asked people some general questions about their views on controversial issues. So we chose corporal punishment in the home and school, flogging your own children, and support for the death penalty. I've already been challenged on the flogging of your own children question because some people have argued that the definition of flogging in the context of Guyana is a bit dubious, because there are some people who claim they don't beat the children, but then they actually might stab the children, so that could be a bit dubious. Even if we take that out, and let's say the support for death penalty and support for proper punishment in the home, support for proper punishment in the school, and then we have the opposition to decriminalization, just to get a tone of where decriminalization sits in the whole scheme. And what we're seeing in the whole scheme is that it seems as though it sits slightly lower than actually flogging your children. So there's a stronger position in relation to these three, proper punishment and flogging your children, and certainly a lower position in relation to the death penalty. I was a bit shocked by the death penalty result. My assumption was that support for the death penalty in Guyana was a lot higher. There are one or two things that could have been happening. Maybe there's stuff happening on the ground that I'm not familiar with. And maybe it's also that a survey of this nature that presents people with so much emotional baggage. And we asked this question at the end. Probably by the time we got to the end, the death penalty seemed like a small issue compared to a lot of the other heavy stuff that we have to deal with. And the whole question of positioning questions in the survey is, I think academically is a challenging one, knowing where to place it, because it is entirely possible that after you unload all of this heavy stuff on someone, and then you get to the end, you ask them about something like the death penalty, they may very well have slightly different views. But that's basically what I said. Okay, so this is the last slide, because I'm anxious to get to responses. We asked people here whether they would change the party support based on the party's gay stance. Now, I acknowledge that we did not say to them the party will change their stance in relation to gays in one way or the other, so they will become more liberal or less liberal. We just asked if changing the party's gay stance would make you more or less likely to support the political party. And essentially, we asked persons, and then we did a cross-tabulation with the individual who they were more likely to support, the party they supported in the last election, right? We asked them, what do you consider yourself, PPP supporting, PNC, etc. And that's basically what was done here. Cumulatively, data suggests to me that there are probably equal numbers of people that would change as the people who would not change their views in relation to party support. So I'm guided by my knowledge of politics, and to say to me that I really don't think it would make a huge difference. The reality of party support in Guyana is that it is a very tribal country as far as party support is concerned. And the core of support base for both major political institutions, which are still very much PPP and PNC, is driven by a factor that is not really related to homosexuality in any sense. And I am inclined to think that the party bases are probably more likely to be motivated by other issues. And if anything, this is not going to make a huge difference to the party. Having said that, however, I think the political supporters that have the greatest concern in relation to the movement on the gay issues is the PNC. They were probably the highest group that said that they would actually would make a difference to their vote. And guess what? The ethnic composition of the PNC is more likely to be. I didn't really deal with the race thing in this. It's that little bit in the report. But I don't want to become too heavy in this. But I think that one of the clear things coming out of the race report is that there's an ethnic difference in terms of the perspective on this issue from an ethnic perspective. And as I said, it is revealed in the fact that the largest number of people who supported the PNC are also saying that it would make a difference in relation to the race. So ladies and gentlemen, that's it. I'm happy to provide copies of the report. We have a commitment to the British High Commission that we will make it as widely available as possible, and I do hope that it helps the advocacy of persons in Guyana, or alternatively, this general research and use any issue, and we hope it will be as widely reported and distributed as possible. Goodbye.
All right. Thank you very much.